G'day, Michaela.
Hey, Warwick.
So, if you could have a movie made about your life, who would you want starring as you?
I would love Emma Stone or Kate Winslet.
Who's Emma Stone?
Do you not watch anything?
No.
Welcome to the Tradies Business Show, helping you get off the tools and into true business ownership so you can spend more time doing the things that matter most. Now, here are your hosts, Warwick Bidwell and Michaela Clark.
And welcome back to another fabulous episode of the Tradies Business Show. And while you were listening to the intro, I was madly Googling Emma Stone.
And he does think she's a hottie.
She's cute.
She is.
Yeah. I don't mind the redhead thing. Although she's had all different colored hair like every Hollywood star. We've got a guest on today's episode that the background may be a bit different to what you would think for a lawyer.
Mm.
A commercial lawyer, contracts, all that sort of stuff, you know. Sorry, Matt, but it's probably not the most exciting stuff. I know we've had a solicitor or a lawyer on the show before talking law stuff. I'm not going to give it away. No. I'm going to make you listen to the episode.
And good, because this could save you thousands of dollars of money in employee issues.
Oh, so. Yeah. If you've ever been afraid of fair work and unfair dismissal, like those words together, four words, fair work, unfair dismissal. Is that four words? Fair work, unfair dismissal. Yes, it is. Mm. Lots of syllables. You need to listen to this.
Yep. And if you think a big takeaway from this is knowing that up until 12 months, if you put someone on, you're protected. Yes. So just have a listen, because if you've been putting off having staff members because you're worried about having staff, have a listen and you'll be all good.
So check it out.
Let's go.
And joining us on today's episode of the Tradies Business Show is Matt Bell from Murdoch Lawyers. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Thanks for having us, Warwick.
Pleasure. We've also got Michaela in the studio today, so she's rolled in as well. So, Matt, tell us a bit about yourself and Murdoch Lawyers, and how did you get to be doing what you're doing today, mate?
Well, I'm a business lawyer, so I focus, my whole practice is on business owners, mainly small to medium-sized business owners. We generally assist business owners with all their documentation, buying and selling businesses, contracts, terms of trade, and employing employees. Murdoch Lawyers is a commercial law firm. We've got offices in Toowoomba and Brisbane. And on the show today, just to talk from the employer's perspective in relation to contracts of employment and what can go wrong if you don't have them in place.
And I know you guys do a lot with tradies in the building construction industry in particular. So what attracts you to that industry?
Well, it's partly to do with where we're located. So being a regional practice, we need to service a broad range of industries. There's a fair bit of construction work going on in our region at the moment. So we just need to be able to service them. Building and construction employers are a large part of my practice. So I need to be able to give them the advice and service they need.
Now, Matt, just backtracking a little bit here, you haven't always been a lawyer, have you, mate?
No, about 11 or 12 years ago, I was in social policy for the state and federal government, so mainly designing social policies in community development. And before that, I played a bit of football.
So tell us a bit more about the football career, mate, because I'm sure our tradie listeners would be more interested in your sporting prowess than your legal background.
Yeah, well, when I was a young teenager, I started playing professional football. The club back then was the Brisbane Strikers, so we were lucky. In our first year, we got to go to the grand final and we won that. So I had about 5 years playing for the Brisbane Strikers and, went on some trials overseas, but wasn't good enough to make it over there. So I came back and became a lawyer.
Didn't have enough bribery money to get in overseas, eh, Matt?
No, that's it. I miss Australia too much.
And you've ended up in Toowoomba.
That's right. Yeah, it's a beautiful place to live.
Good on you, mate. Good on you. So, obviously, we're here to talk about the specifics of law. Is a pretty broad topic, but one of the things that we find a lot of our listeners do get tripped up on is this whole area of employing people. So what's some of the key things that our tradies in business need to be paying attention to?
Well, there's a few things. First of all, you've got to know what award applies to you. And, you know, given the nature of the industry, you know, there's a building and construction general on-site award. That mainly applies civil construction as well as general building and construction. Now, that award's very specific. It requires employers to reach agreement on certain things. So, for example, you've got to decide whether you're going to employ someone full-time, daily hire, or casual. And so to avoid any risk of people misunderstanding what's been agreed verbally, we always recommend that employers have written employment agreements in place. It just lets everyone know you're on the same page and these are the terms and conditions that everyone signed up for. If you don't have the employment agreement in place, then, you know, it just creates more uncertainty. And what people remember was their agreement later on might not be what the other one thought was agreed at the time.
And so what are some critical points to have in your agreements?
Well, the employment agreement needs to be a management tool. So you want to place contractual obligations on employees. If you've got a starting time, then it's important that you specify what that's going to be. You can also specify the procedure for, you know, what's going to happen if you need to start early or start late. That particular award requires workers to start work at a particular time. Now, you can bring it forward an hour, provided you get the agreement of the majority of employees that are affected by that. So you've actually got to have evidence that you've got that agreement. And if you bring the starting time forward too much, then you can be paying overtime and penalty rates because you're starting outside of the span of acceptable hours under the award. So that could affect an employer in a couple of ways. First of all, they've got to pay double time or penalty rates for an early start. And it'll mean that the employees won't be working a sufficient number of ordinary hours. Say you've got 38 ordinary hours to work per week for a full-time employee. That particular award can require employers to work 8 but only pay for 7.6 because they're accruing time towards an industry RDO, which is generally the third Monday in a four-week cycle. So it's reaching agreement around those types of issues. And it's having those obligations on employees. If they breach it, then you can refer back to your employment agreement and say, well, you've breached clause 3 of the employment agreement, you haven't started on time, or you haven't filled in your timesheet, or you haven't taken your meal break at the appropriate time. And you can use that to manage it. So you can give warnings, and it's specific to a breach of an employment condition.
Because I think part of the perception, Matt, is that people are stuck with whatever the award says, but you're just mentioning there about getting agreement from the majority of the workforce, you know, to change the start time. Can employers actually modify some of the standards, I guess, provided employees aren't disadvantaged?
Yeah, what they can do is they can vary the application of certain clauses in the award. So clause 7 of that award is a flexibility term. And that allows the employer and the employees to reach agreements. The agreement has to make sure that the employee is better off overall. So it's got to satisfy that test. So, for example, some employees like to finish early so they can get to coach their kids play footy or take their daughters dancing or whatever they need to do. So you can have this individual agreement in place so that you can start a bit earlier. And leave a bit earlier. There's flexibility. The employee's happy because they get to spend a bit more time with their kids and consider that, you know, they're better off overall, you know, than what they would have been had they have worked under the strict award conditions. Mm. So those individual flexibility agreements, they're very particular. You can't just go and vary the application of all clauses in the award. It's things like, you know, hours of work, it's penalty rates, it's overtime. And your agreement's got to be spot on. If you don't prepare the agreement in accordance with that clause 7 of the award, then you're going to have problems enforcing it later on. And if it doesn't result in the employee being better off overall, then you can get fined. And the companies, you know, you're looking at big fines of over 50 grand and individuals over 10 grand.
Jeez. So it's a lot cheaper to spend the money on legal fees and get your agreements done properly.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best approach is to firstly work a roster. If you can plot out a roster for a four-week cycle and then you can do some financial modelling on what your payment obligation is going to be, and then you can prepare your employment agreements. And once you've set your system up, you know, there's a bit of money to set them up, but it's a hell of a lot cheaper than paying one of those fines or getting it wrong and then having to go back and, you know, fix up all the underpayments and then still have to deal with fines. So it's just a cheaper option. You know, we try to prevent claims, and if we can't, we try to get in and deal with them as quickly as possible rather than let them go on and fester.
And so another big area that a lot of our listeners struggle with is getting rid of employees that aren't performing. So using your employee contracts where you have got those performance things put in can certainly help in dismissing an employee. Would that be correct?
Absolutely. It's in an employment dispute, it's what you can prove. And so if you've got a written employment agreement that says turn up for work on time, and then an employee doesn't turn up for work on time, and then you've got a written warning saying, well, you didn't turn up for work on time and you breached clause 3.5 of your employment agreement, then you're setting up an evidence trail. And it's easier to show that to a Fair Work Ombudsman or a tribunal or a court and prove what you're saying. So if you don't have that evidence, you don't have the written employment agreement or the warnings, then it's a case of he said, she said. So with Fair Work, it's almost always what you can prove, and, you know, it's just having good records and systems in place to be able to do that.
So basically, you know, you've got to have, well, you don't have to have an agreement, but if you have the agreement, you have the paper trail and the evidence, you dismiss somebody because they're not performing and they make a claim to Fair Work against an employer, you want to have all of those ducks lined up when you end up in front of the, you know, the magistrate or whoever.
Yeah, exactly right. Your documents will tell the story to the court, and it'll just back up what, you know, what your employer or what your tradesperson's saying to the court. So you've got the written evidence there. It just makes it easier for the court to make a decision.
Because there's a lot of fear from employers, and I know smaller employers of staff really worry about letting people go that aren't performing because they're just really afraid of having a Fair Work case brought against them. But does it need to be that scary, Matt?
No, not necessarily. I mean, you've just got to have a good understanding as to what the parameters are. So, for example, there's a statutory probationary period built into the Fair Work Act. So with smaller business owners, if they've got less than 15 staff, employees have to serve a qualifying period. So that's going to be 12 months before they are even eligible to apply for unfair dismissal. So if you're going to put a new person on, you need a bit of time to see whether they're going to work out, whether they work the same way or, you know, they're up to scratch. And if they're not, you need to make the decision to dismiss them, you know, for whatever the reason is. If they're not up to scratch, then that's the reason for it. And if you dismiss the employee in that situation before the end of 12 months, they haven't qualified for unfair dismissal, so they can't bring that claim. And if you're a bigger employee, if you've got more than 15 staff, then the qualifying period is 6 months. So it's making sure that if you put a new employee on, you have a catch-up at least 5 months out, and if it's not working out, then you make the decision to terminate before the employee can go off to the Fair Work Commission and apply for unfair dismissal.
So that's something I think will surprise a lot of our listeners, that they had, you know, it's often known as 3 months probation period, but you're saying, so they've got 12 months probation period where they can't even put a claim forward.
Yeah, that's right. They can't bring a claim for unfair dismissal. You know, it's common for employers to have that statutory, you know, qualifying period, and also in an employment agreement have a contractual probationary period. So, but if they don't have the contractual probationary period, then they can fall back on that Fair Work Act. And so 6 months for the bigger employers and 12 months for the smaller employers.
And the key thing there, and it's something that I know a lot of employers struggle with because they are trying to do the right thing by everybody, is being decisive. If somebody's not working out, don't let it drag on. Don't be thinking, oh, you know, he'll come around or she'll, you know, she's trying really hard. Is you just have to be decisive, because once it goes past that 6 or 12 month period, it can get a bit more difficult, and you know, you do open yourself up as an employer to somebody bringing a claim against you.
Absolutely right. If if you let it go, if you keep giving the employees a chance and they're not improving, and you've tried to correct the behaviour or the work or whatever you've tried to do, if it's not working out, then more often than not, the employees are better off making the decision. If they dwell on the decision, the employee will qualify, and if they then mess up the process or the documentation, then they'll be in the Fair Work Commission defending an unfair dismissal or some other claim.
So I'm sure you've heard of a lot of horror stories over the years with people not having, you know, the correct paperwork and contracts in place. Let's do a bit of scaremongering and get our listeners into shape, hey? So you've got any horror stories that you can share?
Yeah, there was a situation. One of our clients employed some staff. They were a reasonably large employer. And there was a complaint by a single employee. The amount being claimed was about $2,500. Now, the this employer took some advice from an advisor who wasn't a lawyer, and the advice was, we'll just wait and see, and this will go away, and we won't provide assistance to the investigator. So the investigator didn't take that really well, and decided that they'd start expanding the scope of their investigation. So, unfortunately, there was a $2,500 claim that could have been dealt with relatively quickly. And just because of the way they approached the ombudsman and they didn't cooperate, that ended up costing over six figures. So it was over $100,000. And then, so they had to fix up underpayments. So it went from one staff member to everyone on that particular worksite, and then it went to all of their staff in Queensland over a 12-month period. So about 80 staff, and because the roster wasn't done correctly, while the employer thought they were paying the right amount of money, it cost them a lot of money. It could have been avoided. And, my advice to employers, if you get contacted by a Fair Work Ombudsman, cooperate with the investigation, keep them at the door, and open up the books and show them what you've done. And if you have underpaid, get onto it straight away, because just by not fixing that up, in this case, cost our employer another 5 months, because by the time they got to fix it up, the underpayments had blown out for another 5 months.
Jeez. Yeah, I wonder if they're still taking advice from that other advisor.
I don't think so.
Send him an invoice or her an invoice.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, that award is particularly nasty. It's, in my view, it's unnecessarily complex. It requires things like employers to reimburse employees for boots, safety boots. If employees lose their own tools and equipment, then the employers have to reimburse that up to a certain amount. If the employer doesn't give them an unpaid meal break 5 hours after starting, then they're into overtime. So there's 90 something separate allowances in that particular award. So it's really nasty. So that's why if you can set up your system at the front end, then maintaining that system later on is a hell of a lot easier and cheaper. It's much more cost effective.
Yeah. And is it as simple, Matt, as just going to Google and downloading a copy of an employment agreement you found on a similar sort of business's site somewhere, or a template from the US? I mean,
no, certainly not. I think that's the starting point.
I say that tongue in cheek, mate, but you'd be horrified at the number of people that I've seen do exactly that.
Yeah, exactly right. I see it with my clients as well. For example, if you look at it could be a workplace bullying policy that someone's ripped off Google, and it's actually based upon American law, and the American law is slightly different than the Australian law there. There was a big case last year where a large multinational employer had a prevention of sexual harassment policy, and one of their staff member didn't follow it, and there was 12 incidents of, sexual harassment, comments and, propositions for a female employee. Now, one of the things in that case, so the employer lost, and even though they had a policy in place, they didn't customise it for the local jurisdiction. So they had a global sexual harassment policy, which essentially didn't help them in the end because they didn't make it specific for Australia.
Yep.
So it's the same for smaller employers. The size it won't matter too much. If you're not complying with the law, you're not complying with the law.
Yeah.
But in terms of, you know, employment agreement templates, you know, the Fair Work Ombudsman has a good website. You know, there is a free template on there. So if they're going to go and pick up a free template anywhere, then, you know, I would recommend that they visit the Fair Work Ombudsman's website. It's not customised and it doesn't place additional obligations on employees. So in terms of a management tool, it's pretty limited. But if you just want a basic coverage, then I recommend using that rather than something they find off Google.
Yeah, if you were going to hold anything up, you'd want to hold up Fair Work's template rather than somebody else's.
Exactly right.
So, I mean, there is so much to this, and it depends on awards and everything, but really it comes down to having written agreements with your staff. There's something that I come across sometimes is employers trying to do the right thing by both parties so everybody has clarity about what the agreement is. What happens in the case where an employee just won't sign the damn thing? Like they avoid it, put it off, just straight out refuse to sign it? Where does that leave our tradie listeners?
Yeah, it's always best if you can get the employment agreement out to the employee before they start work. Yeah. And generally speaking, the employee can accept the offer of employment in a couple of ways. One is to sign and return the employment agreement. The second one is to turn up and perform in accordance with the employment agreement. You can't physically, you know, grab the employee's hand and make them sign the employment agreement. So if they're not going to sign it, well, you can't physically force them to. But, you know, generally speaking, the best way to deal with it is to make the offer up front and say, if you want to come on site, well, you come and work for me and sign and return that along with the other forms that you need to get them to sign up to.
Yep, yep. And I've had an instance with a tradie business where the employee refused to sign it, still showed up for work for some months, and then tried to bring a claim against the employer, threatened to basically bring a claim against them in Fair Work. It never amounted to anything, not surprising. I suspect the guy went and got some advice and got told that, well, he's, you know, almost agreed by just showing up to work, you know, with those terms because it was given to him prior to him starting. So is that what you're saying? Like, you've got to have the agreement, even if it's not signed. It's sort of you know, implicitly agreed by the employee.
Yeah, that's right. So with employment law, you can still try to enforce a verbal offer of employment. It's just more challenging. And so where you're in a situation like that, the employee's being prickly and won't want to sign your employment agreement, you know, if you can't find out why or what in the employment agreement's, you know, the issue that's holding it up, then another way to approach it is to introduce policies and procedures. So for employers, these are another management tool, and they're considered to be reasonable. Well, they're directions to the employees for them to follow. So that's another way around it. If there are key things in the employment agreement that the employee won't sign up to or agree to, then you can introduce a policy and direct the employees to comply with it. And it's particularly important for work health and safety and things like that.
Yeah. So, Matt, one of the questions, and there's a lot more we could ask you, I think we might have to get you back on the show again, but one of the questions we love to ask our guests on the show is if you had 1,000 tradies in the room, so tradie employers in the room in this case, what's one piece of advice you would just love to leave with them?
Put in place documented policies and procedures and employment agreements. I think that's the biggest piece of advice.
So there you go, listeners. If you didn't get the hint from this episode, get written employment agreements and policies and procedures, and just it's like insurance. It's cheap insurance against this stuff that employers are just so afraid of. They're so scared of the whole Fair Work thing. And if you just have these instruments in place, you can knock a lot of that on the head before it even comes up.
Absolutely. And you control you control the costs. So if it's alleged that you've underpaid, then you can say, well, this is how we're paying and this is how we've calculated it, and this is what we're looking to absorb into the rate that you're paying.
Yeah, exactly, Matt. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners will want to get some more advice. So if they want to have a chat further, how can they find you?
So we're on, we're online, so murdochlawyers.com.au, or we can be contacted by telephone at 4616 9860, or on email. My email's Matt, matt@murdochs.com.au.
Good
Great.
Stuff.
Well, thanks for coming on the show today. Hopefully you've got our listeners into shape and doing all their agreements.
Covering their backsides, mate. Mm. Hey, one quick one. What position did you play when you were with the Strikers, mate?
Defender.
That's appropriate. Looking after ball security. Good stuff. Well, look, thanks again for coming on the show, Matt. And, we'll definitely have to get you on again.
Okay, thanks for having us.
Cheers, buddy.
Thanks.
Bye.
Okay, bye then. Bye, guys.
So, I bet you got a couple of ahas out of that episode.
Yes.
I know I did, which is a bit scary. But, the 12-month, 6-month thing.
Mm.
The key takeaway for me from that was a bit of a tongue twister. The key takeaway from that for me was be decisive. See, you've got these time periods that have been gifted to you by the government, who we love to hate, but you get, for most of our listeners out there, you get 12-month free look at an employee. So if they're not working out for whatever reason, you just got to get the courage to have that conversation, say, look, Michaela, I'm really sorry, but you're just not working out. It's not a good fit. We're going to have to let you go.
Hmm.
No one likes doing it, but honestly, if you tick over that 12-month period, it gets a lot harder, and then you have to have all this other stuff in place, contracts and all that sort of jazz. Otherwise, you're really exposing yourself to the risk of a unfair dismissal claim.
Mm. And the takeaway for me is really it is simple just investing in some good contracts and getting some proper advice, not like that case study gave where he didn't get advice from a lawyer.
Took the advice of somebody else. Yeah. I wonder if it was like a brother-in-law at a barbecue.
So just make sure it's worth investing in good systems and paperwork and contracts from the start and doing it right from the start. And then you've got it, you've done it. So you're not going to have any issues if you get it done right from the start. So invest up front.
That's right. And another way you can get it right from the start is go check out the Tradies Business Toolkit. I know we bang on about this thing, but Michaela and I are working on really beefing it up as well. I mean, it's already insane value. But there's a lot of cool stuff in there. There's bonus interviews that we've done with guests over the last little while, and we're working on putting some more in there. So there's extended interviews, there's templates you can download. We've just been in the studio recording some video training, and I'm madly editing that and putting the finishing touches on it. So keep your ears out for that as well. And we'll be doing some more stuff via the private Facebook group to add even more value to your tradie businesses and make sure that you've got the upper hand on your competition. So go to tradiesbusinesstoolkit.com. It'll cost you the princely sum of $1 for the first 30 days. And then after that, if you like it and you stick around, and so far pretty much everybody does, it's just $27 a month. And that's because we have international members and listeners and all that sort of stuff, and it helps with PayPal and all that sort of garbage. So, look, it's $35 or something Aussie, roughly, depending on the exchange rate. Insert disclaimer here. It's still crazy good value. It's less than a carton of beer.
So go do it.
Okay.
If you want to know more about the show, tradiesbusinessshow.com, and that's it.
Until next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Tradies Business Show with Warwick Bidwell and Michaela Clark. Want to get off the tools and into true business ownership? Find out how at tradiesbusinessshow.com.